This podcast is a Uniting Heart and Soul production. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Filthy Hope podcast. Last week we kicked off our series about sexuality and intimacy by talking about depictions of sex on screen. And today we're continuing that conversation by diving into pornography. My name is Jonty Cornford and I am the creative director here at Uniting Heart and Soul, and myself and senior pastor Rev Ness sit down each week to talk about the grey spaces where religion and culture intersect. This week we're also joined by Julie Ryan, our resident psychologist. Some of you will remember Jules from an earlier episode, and today she is joining us specifically to talk about the effects of pornography on the brain and people's psychology, especially with young men. The usual warnings apply about swearing and potential sexual content, but as always, we are having these conversations with the intent of opening up communication and promoting education in areas that the church has historically been pretty poor at addressing. Do all the things you're meant to do for podcasts on whatever platform you're on. Leave a review. I don't know. I'm told it helps. And I'll be back later to tell you more about how you can support Jules' work in the community. But for now, enjoy our conversation. Ness, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm super excited about today and the topic, the big P word, and I don't mean penis. Penis.
If you say it enough times, I'll stop being uncomfortable.
That's right.
Yeah. That's right. We're going to be diving into part two of our series talking about sexuality and intimacy. We're going to be talking about pornography. So again, I'm sure future Jonty may well have already warned you. We're going to be going there. We're going to be talking about pornography, which means we're going to be talking about sexuality and maybe some sexual imagery that, you know, you might feel uncomfortable listening to. And if that's you, feel free to skip through those sections. But yeah, we've got our wonderful guest, Julie Ryan, with us as well. We're going to jump to an interview soon. Some of you may remember one of the very first episodes we did. She joined us. She is our resident psychologist.
And she's a powerhouse, part of the fam.
She's wonderful. So yeah, we're going to jump to that shortly. Before we do that, of course, though, we have to talk about Vent Central. So something that is grinding my gears this week. It's happened a couple of times to me this week and it really annoys, I'm sure it annoys you and listeners, I'm sure it annoys you as well. And if it doesn't annoy you, you need to listen up. The little courtesy wave in the car.
Yeah.
You know, it's just common.
Someone cuts in
or you let someone in or you stop for someone across the road, whatever it is. Just
Love
all
that.
It needs to be is a couple
Two fingers
up. That's all.
Yeah.
Just common decency.
Yeah.
I think three or four times this week it's happened to me where there was one this morning, in fact, I was driving in and it was in a particularly narrow stretch of road. Cars parked on either side, car coming in the other direction. I move over a little bit because they were there before me. They sort of hesitated, so I gave them a little flash to say, come on through. They came through. I gave a little courtesy wave. Have a good day. Nothing.
Oh, yes, Jonty.
How good is that?
Oh, I live in a suburb
where
there's really narrow streets and there's lots of parking on either side of the street.
Mm.
And we also, in this suburb, we have a lot of what we call out-of-towners.
Sure.
They actually come from the eastern suburbs over to the northern beaches and they come in and they live in the posh homes on the northern beaches on the weekends. And it's the out-of-towners that do not give you the little wave as they're going through in their Porsche four-wheel drive.
It's always the big SUVs, isn't it?
Oh, it gives me the shits.
So I don't live here anymore, but where I used to live, there was a, I won't name the school, but if you know me personally, you'll know exactly which school I'm talking about. I used to have to when Mum used to drop me at the train station on the way to work, I'd have to go past another private school.
I know the one.
On the way. Very similar, kind of a little bit narrow. It's not super narrow, but when you've got parked cars on both sides and people doing drop-off, it's a bit hectic. Often, through no one's fault, just the way that the road works, you kind of have to stop and let people through and then wait for your turn and whatever. Every single time, it's the big petrol-guzzling four-wheel drives that just storm through. Nearly been in a few crashes, to be honest, where, you know, nothing super dangerous, but just, you know, it's the lack of even thought that, well, I guess, I mean, to be fair, they do drive Porsche and BMW SUV, so they do have a right to treat everyone else on the road like shit, I guess. That's the unspoken rule there.
And the out-of-towners that drive cars down in my suburb, they have badges that I don't even recognise. And it's usually the women, and I'm going to say this because I'm a brunette, they all have this smooth, beautiful, blow-dried bob.
Yeah.
And it's usually blonde.
Yeah.
And they don't give you a wave. Cheeky.
I'll tell this little short anecdote before we jump over to the interview. I drive a Nissan X-Trail. I find for me it's perfect because I have a whole bunch of music gear that I need lugging around, but it's also not a huge, big full drive thing. But the joke amongst me and my mates is sort of that it's a bit of a soccer mum car. So, of course, when you buy a new... I've had this car for 18 months now. When you buy a new car, you have to name it. Whether or not the name sticks, that's just part of the whole thing, right? So we were trying to think of names for the X-Trail. The one that's sort of stuck is Zanny, because it's an X-Trail. Zanny as in Xanax. Because it's a soccer mum car, and the joke there being that soccer mums are all high on prescription drugs all the time.
Oh, wow. And I thought the smooth blow-dried hair was a low blow.
So, long story short, if you hadn't even noticed that people... Like, if this is all new to you, the idea of the courtesy wave, you're that guy or you're that girl. So, just do it. It takes zero...
If in doubt, just pop some fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll quote that. Brev Ness, if in doubt, pop some fingers. Lock that one in. Yeah, so that's my Vent Central this week. Petty, as all the best Vent Centrals are, but it grinds my gears. It really annoys me.
Yeah, I'm on your page, brother.
So, like we said before, we're about to dive over to a conversation with Jules, our psychologist, to talk a little bit about pornography. Before we dive over, is there anything else that we want to...
Yeah, she's going to be talking about the reward center of the brain and addiction and how porn and neuroplasticity of the brain, I believe. She's going to be touching on those subjects. And I'm so super keen to understand the effects of porn, particularly on young people, and what can be done about that. What can we do to help young people understand that porn is entertainment and it's not real. It's they're pretending. They're actors, right?
Yeah.
But poor young kids are getting addicted to this thing and thinking this is a real thing, and we'll unpack that shortly with Julie. But I suppose now's a perfect opportunity for me to kind of have a confession, Pastor Jonty, if that's okay.
A confession?
Yeah.
Give it to me. Let's go.
Well, as I've been doing my research on dopamine and oxytocin, which are these drugs that get released into the brain, I've been reading, when you have an addictive thing going on and that makes you feel nice. This is one of the things that I imagine Jules will cover. I have an addiction, and it's to Dr. Pimple Popper. I love it. Jonty, I can have moments where, and I've got friends that send me the latest pustules being excised. Oh, I just love it. I just love watching her get the fingers under them and watching the pus come out. It makes me feel really happy. I get a sense, I'm even telling you about it and I actually feel happy in my brain telling you about it because I think that person and their chin is going to be free from all that bacteria and it's going to feel, oh, it's just going to feel so beautiful for them. And it just feels nice to watch it coming out. I'm wondering, is that kind of like porn? Because it's like pus coming out of your face and ejaculation coming out of your penis. I'm just thinking, have I got an addiction problem? Is it like face porn?
Well, we might even find out a little bit about that. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not the right... Because I'm going to be honest, even just talking about that makes me feel sick. I hate it.
But I'm thinking there are people that are listening today.
Oh, it's a thing. Yeah.
That probably really are with me on that and know that feeling that you get in your head when you watch it. I can't watch too much of it. Just a couple of minutes kind of go, oh, that was such a good one. Mm. And watch it come out. It just goes, yeah.
I feel like it's a similar thing. Not so much anymore, but I used to love watching chiropractic videos.
Oh, see, I can't do that, mate.
No?
What is wrong with you? That is gross.
It's the same thing. I think it's that relief of seeing and hearing people get adjusted.
Oh,
and
no.
And the relief that they, yeah.
La, 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 la.
Yeah, exactly.
La,
this
la,
is how
la,
I felt.
La, 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 la.
How do you think I feel talking about fucking pimple popping? Get out of here. Well, all that great content and more just around the corner. We're going to be talking about pornography again. If that's something that you feel uncomfortable talking about, maybe skip through. But I would actually encourage, if that's something you feel uncomfortable talking about, this is the episode that you needed to listen to.
You need to be prepared that I'm going to share. Mm. You know how I roll. It's going to be authentic and honest. So if you're a little bit squeamish to the story, you may not want to plug into this one.
Mm.
And just look after yourself in the conversation while you're listening.
Yeah. I think something I failed to mention in the interview, which a little peek behind the curtain, we've actually already shot and recorded, is this idea that, you know, regardless of how you feel about pornography and where that plays into your faith, if that affects it or any other thing, is this idea that we need to be responsible for what we engage with and how, and be really aware of how that's affecting us. You know, I'm not trained biblically, but I know somewhere it talks about not allowing yourself to stumble and being aware of things that do make you stumble and cutting those things out of your life. But also if you're causing someone else to stumble, that's also really important. So just be aware if anything that we're talking about is sending your brain in places that you don't want to go.
Yeah.
That's totally fine.
Yeah.
But it's up to you to be really mindful of that. So
and
just,
if my
just
language and
mind.
Descriptions make you stumble, then can you turn off now and go and listen to something else? Benny Hinn or Brian Houston or somebody else?
Joyce Meyer?
Joyce. Yeah. Yeah. Go
She's
and
great.
Listen to them.
Go and listen
Beautiful.
To her.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%.
Anyway, past Jonty, I'm going to hand over to you. Thanks, future Jonty. Great to be here with our wonderful guest, Julie Ryan. Thanks for coming on. And, of course, my co-host, Ness. So we're just going to have a quick chat about some of our experiences, but also some of Julie's experiences in her work. People may remember Julie from a previous episode where she was on talking about her work as a psychologist. So thank you so much for coming on again.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Jonty.
So... let's just open the conversation with, we want to talk specifically today about pornography through the eyes of what it's like to be a young person today. So I thought I'd just kick off by talking a little bit about this idea that pornography is a very new phenomenon in our culture, in the current form that it takes, in the sense that everyone that has one of these things in their pocket can find anything almost immediately, and the access to everything that everyone has all of a sudden is a very, very new thing. And so what that means is, and I'm sure there are stats that we can find later, but the age at which people are encountering pornography for the first time is scarily low. And what that does to a young brain, I don't think we quite really understand yet.
And last episode I talked about, you know, the porn on the walls of my home.
Yes.
In the form of dad's artwork, because he's an artist, and nude pictures of mum was all over the wall, and I just thought that that was normal, and didn't all mothers have paintings of themselves, their boobs and their bush on the wall? And it's an interesting thing, because I also remember my first so I never thought that was porn because I didn't know what porn was. But I remember finding in Dad's studio a pile of Playboy magazines. And I can't remember how old I was, but I would have been pretty little, I think. And flicking through the pages and seeing pictures of nude girls. But there were never images of men and women having sex like the stuff that young people are seeing these days. They were just those classic Hugh Hefner, nude, voluptuous women, right? A little bit like, almost like young girls are seeing today, we all see today on a billboard advertising a perfume.
Or underwear.
Or underwear. Yeah, that's exactly right. Or anything, really. I mean, the Kardashians have made a fortune out of, you know, having half-nude bodies, a little bit like we used to see in Playboy back in the 70s, you know? And you remember that image, that famous image of Marilyn Monroe draped out on red velvet, and she's laying back, and I think it's actually a beautiful photograph of her.
Yeah.
Of her beautiful, slender body and one leg's covering her private parts, and you see a bit boobs, and it's a really beautiful shot of her body, and that was as ugly as it really got back then, to my knowledge. I mean, correct me if I've got that completely wrong and I'm naive, but today it's the violence and the aggression of porn, and the and all that shit that is absolutely devastating, I would imagine, to the human brain and to our precious kids that are accessing this shit.
I think, and this is, I could well, future Jonty could well have covered this as well, but I think because this is a quote-unquote church podcast as well, I want to say that when we're talking about porn in this way, we're not coming at it from a this is inherently good or this is inherently bad, like taking any moral stance on it necessarily. We're purely just talking about it in a really honest way. And because, as we sort of spoke about last week, this idea that the church shouldn't talk about sex or doesn't talk about sex is actually more unhelpful than, I think, and, you know, a lot of the time the heart is in the right place there. But yeah, and just carrying on from that, I don't know, I can't speak with any authority on this, but my suspicion would be that that more violent pornography may well have been around earlier.
Right.
But the important thing is that now with the internet, you can, it's readily available, as is every type of pornography you could think of.
Yeah.
You can find it just with your two thumbs on your phone. Which is important for, if we're going to speak on behalf of the church, it's important to acknowledge that and actually start a conversation. Because, and I want to throw over to you here, Julie, to see what you think, we need to acknowledge that kids, not just teenagers, but kids are finding pornography, even if they don't know what it is, kind of like what you were saying earlier.
Yeah.
So I guess, Jules, what's your experience with in this area? Like, have you come across children or young people having been affected by pornography?
Yeah, definitely. I think science is only just realising the neurological repercussions of porn. And as you said, Jonty, the difference here is it's not so much porn's a new thing, it's the access through the internet. Yeah, so that's the difference here. But scientifically, we know that it's causing a lot of mental health problems and a lot of sexual dysfunction. That's for people who are chronic porn users. I mean, apart from noticing the sexualized behaviors of youngsters at school, but in my private practice, most definitely with young adults finding it difficult to get an erection, have an orgasm, and when that human need comes along, like for the desire hits, they very often grab the phone, the laptop.
Yeah.
And so the idea of them being able to be sexually aroused and satisfied, that's where they're getting it. So when they go to their real life partner, they find it difficult, they find it hard. And the brain's just doing what the brain does. So it's as you said before, it's not a moral standpoint platform at all. It's just the brain's doing what it does, and that's because it's of plasticity, and that's its ability to change and adapt with experience. And so the dopamine reward system becomes habituated. So it's not unlike substance abuse. It's very similar because, you know, what might have got you into a state where you're like, oh, I feel really relaxed now, and you've had three glasses of wine, a couple of years later it might be two bottles to get that same, because the brain, habituates. So, yeah, and so I have had clients come in and not understand why they can't, you know, they're not getting sexually aroused anymore by their by their partner. So it's quite liberating for them when they understand what the brain's doing, because it's not they're a bad person or anything like that. It's just the brain's doing what it's scared to do, and it remembers. The brain remembers stores where you got your pleasure from, where you got your food from, so it's there. So it reverts to that. Ah, it's by watching. That's what I need to do. But of course, because it habituates, it needs more and more and more. And the porn industry, they know this because that's why it's the upping the ante. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have to do more and more, like the violence
and extreme behaviours, I suppose, that are outside the what I'd call the normal bedroom.
Yeah.
Potentially. And again, I'm not casting any judgment. If you like it harder, deeper, stronger, meaner.
Don't look at me.
I'm just saying, knock yourselves out, people. You just go hard as long as it's consensual. But the worry for me is the children, is the access to the kids. I mean, consenting adults is one thing, totally another story. But it's the children.
And it's a real lack of education around it. And I think part of that is because it is such a new thing. It's as old as the internet, which is still very new, and we're still figuring out exactly, and through research, but through education, all these different things, we're still actually not 100% caught up on how instant access to everything all the time affects how we interface with information, let alone process it, and how that affects our behaviour. So, in the same way that education around drugs is really important, because just simply saying, don't do them, why? Are they bad? That's not enough, because people will do drugs. People always have done drugs, and people will continue to do drugs. And it's not about just saying, no, don't do it, because when those people then go and do it, they're not educated and equipped to encounter those situations, and that's how people get hurt and how tragedies happen. And so it's the same thing with pornography, and it's the same thing. Everyone that goes through schooling in Australia has some form of sex education. It's been a long time since I was in primary school, but I certainly have no memory of being taught about what porn was when I was in primary school.
No, I don't think they actually teach it, you know.
I'd have to check that.
Yeah, do you know, Julie, if they're...
No, I don't. I can't say for sure, but I haven't come across any curriculum where they're discussing pornography.
I do remember the condom on the banana, which was very entertaining.
Everyone remembers that one.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, so, and I think in the same way, last week we were talking about, the lack of education, it's not just the church, but because we come from church backgrounds, the lack of education, the lack of willingness and openness to talk about these sorts of things within the church, particularly when that becomes wrapped up in things like purity culture and the sort of the culture around the traditional, quote-unquote, conservative understanding of what sex is, you combine that with the just the fact that young people are going to be curious and whether or not they're going to engage in certain behaviours, they're certainly going to be curious about it and go searching. And at the moment, that means that people are looking at porn on their phones. Like, that's just the reality. And ignoring that or pretending that it doesn't happen is worse than actually... I mean, it sounds simple, but, like, it needs to be said that actually talking about it and educating young people about what it is and the effect that it can have on you and the effect that it particularly can have on your relationships that you were just talking about before. Yeah.
Definitely. And what about the effect of shame? Because there's shame around it. It's porn is tucked away, isn't it? It's overt because we can find it, but there's still a shame element to it. People don't generally...
That's why we don't talk about it.
We don't do it. Do boys talk about it at the pub? Is it like a common?
I mean, not my mates, but like, I can only speak for myself.
Yeah, I wouldn't
be surprised. Again, I'm not going to speak for anyone else. But I think, I mean, it's also a fact that we you were just talking about the how what was considered as pornography in the past is now advertising.
Yeah,
we definitely do live in a culture that is.
Hypersexual.
Whether you want to say it's been desensitized to sexuality, but sexuality is a part of culture and has been for a long time. It's the old adage that sex sells. Of course it does.
Julie, I'm interested in what does porn and the effects of porn in a consenting couple arrangement, what sort of effects does that have on the marriage? Can it lead to dysfunction in the marriage and resentment and...
Well, that's a big question.
Yeah.
Issues
of attachment, things like that. That's where my brain automatically goes.
Yeah. No, I'm not so sure about the attachment. I think it's, from what I'm seeing, it's more about, as I said before, understanding the brain, the plasticity of the brain.
Yeah.
It's really... And that in itself is very... empowering for people to know, because a lot of people don't know that. And if we could teach our kids very early about the brain, and this isn't about a judgment call about sex or what sort of sex you like or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's about just knowing what this wonderful machinery is about, you know, and how... So you can still remain in control if that's what you want to be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's where it's sad when things do move into an addiction. It's very hard. It's very hard for people because that's when they, you know, the shame comes in and not realizing it's not that they're a bad person at all. It's just that, you know, it just develops, you know. The issue would be in a relationship is always about consent. And always about not doing anything that you're not comfortable with. And that, I think the schools are getting good and the advertising's getting good with that sort of thing. You know, that sex education. I watched that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked off camera about the TV show Sex Education.
Yeah. That's a step in the right direction, I think.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
My sons both watched it and, you know, they liked it, so I think it does it in a very tasteful way.
And last week we were talking about depictions of good sex on screen and depictions of bad sex on screen and actually being discerning and being able to see which is which and that actually being really helpful. And sex education is a great example of something that I think is actually... We talked about Game of Thrones being sometimes problematic and bad... depictions of sex. Sex education, I think, is the exact opposite. I think it's wonderful and I think everyone should watch it.
I agree.
If you want to see a show that's funny and heartfelt and really well written and just a great show, but also I think is really healthy in the way that it depicts sex, in depicting good sex as being good, but also sex that maybe has power imbalance or lack of consent, whatever it is, depicts those things as what they are in a way that you can watch and understand that that's what you're seeing.
Yeah.
And the effects that can have on both
people in that relationship. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember a young girl sharing a story with me about when she was a young girl, one of her first sexual experiences was by getting communication from the boy that she loved at the time through sexting. So communication. Now, he's getting his information via the internet and watching porn. Mm. So he thinks what he's saying to the beautiful young girl is what young girls want to be hearing, mm. which is hardcore, pretty rugged information. Mm. And she's left going, oh, he thinks this is what girls like. And she's receiving it going, oh, this is what sex is. And then in amongst all of that, there is the wrap-up of shame mm. around, is this normal? Is mm. it not normal? Is this what we're all meant to be doing? Is mm. this what it's all about? Mm. That's got to cause problems.
Yep.
Because when two bodies get together and then naked in a room, it's not necessarily a really pretty picture, like the movies. You know, I know I don't look like the chick on Bridgerton, even with my frock half pulled up, mate. Do you know what I mean? I don't have those smooth, juicy yeah. thighs and perky boobs anymore.
No, I don't know.
Do you know what I mean? But Rob's still, you know, getting his rocks off. It's okay. I think...
Shout
what
out to Rob.
Go, Rob. Go to my juicy thighs. I just wonder what it's doing to these young people today. And I do remember her telling me that the parent, the father, when her parents confronted his parents on the graphic material that they found, that the father thought there was nothing wrong here.
Mm.
Yeah, mm. and pull your head in, there's nothing wrong here. This is just normal and it's all a part of educating my son. My son needs to get his needs met.
Mm.
Yeah. Just what is that?
Yeah, it's lack of education, I think.
Mm. It also...
It also
reminds me of my grandfather used to say, anything in moderation.
Right? Yeah.
And, like, you know, this is a long, long time ago. He was born in the 19th century, so it took a long, long time ago. And and I think it's a simple truth.
Mm.
So... You know, mm. if you watch porn a few times, it doesn't mean that you're going to be addicted or, you know, that your brain's going to change like that. But if you're doing it chronically a lot, yep. what happens is that, like substance abuse, they're hyper-stimulating the reward system in the brain, mm. leading to elevated levels of dopamine. Mm. So that when you're in more of a natural environment, person-to-person intimacy, sexual attraction, it's interfered with it.
Yeah.
And that's the danger.
Okay. And I'm going to go there with orgasm now.
Sure.
And I think this is interesting because in porn, often an orgasm can last for a really long time. You know, almost like the length of the movie. It can just go and go and go. And I don't know about either of you, but my orgasms don't last the length of a movie. And when I look out at the animals in the jungle,
mm.
they get it in, they get it on, they go pump, pump, pump.
Yeah.
Business is done, orgasm over, walk away. Mm. Job is done, right? And I'm thinking that porn leaves you thinking...
Yeah.
What's wrong with me? Because I get it going and it's all exciting and then, man, I want it to go longer because it feels so great and my brain's having the best time.
Mm.
But then it's done,
mm.
you know? And FYI, I think that's normal.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's right? about understanding that the people on screen in porn are actors.
That's right.
And they're performing. It isn't real life. And this is coming full circle back to the first part of this conversation. Is understanding what porn is from the very beginning is so important, and it's something that so many people didn't have when they first encountered porn, is understanding that real life doesn't happen like how you see it on screen in porn. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, I think a lot of people would assume that Christians or church people talking about porn is leaning in one way. No, we're not trying to be prudish. It's actually about what I feel really strongly about this idea that encountering porn at the wrong age and without the proper tools to understand what it is and how it's affecting you has such bad effects on your sexuality.
Yeah.
Which is really important. And, you know, if I'm going to put my Jesus hat on, you know, it's a part of who we are that we have sex and it's enjoyable and it's designed that way. And watching porn without the proper being equipped to know what it is and how it's going to affect you is just going to harm that.
Yeah.
And that's not good.
Yeah, it's dangerous, isn't it? Yeah. So for an adult, we've had sex and we understand how it functions and how it works, right? But for a kid that's never done it before, and if that's their first experience to what sex actually is, that's scary, isn't it? Mm. And dangerous. Yeah. And addictive.
And I think in what universe is, you know, a 9-year-old boy, let's say, I can only speak as a male, a 9-year-old boy is going to encounter porn. All of a sudden, they've been watching porn, whether regularly or not, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, they find themselves in a relationship.
Yeah.
And they haven't been educated or they haven't had those conversations. In what universe is that going to lead to someone who is going to make healthy, informed decisions about their sexuality if their idea of what sexuality is based on a performance, entertainment? That's what it is.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Can you imagine not being able to be aroused with your beautiful partner anymore because you've watched so much porn that you actually need to bring in somebody else into the arrangement and then watch her and him having sex so that you can actually get aroused yourself to then be able to have sex with your wife?
That's right.
Or your partner, same gender, I don't care.
Mm.
That's a thing.
Yeah, I know.
And that's got to be detrimental to relationships.
Yeah.
It has to be.
Mm.
So sex before marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going
hands up.
We're going to cover this in full. We're going to devote an entire episode to this later. But just to get this conversation going as well, because all of these things are interlinked, is this idea of should Christians have sex before marriage? Mm. I mean, where do we want to start? Like,
I'm going to start.
Go for it.
As a minister, I marry young couples and some of them have had sex before marriage and some of them haven't. And I think what I'm seeing is that there's more couples in the church that are getting married that have had sex before marriage. And I wonder if they come to me because I just don't do the shame routine.
Yeah.
I don't do that.
Thank goodness.
Praise the Lord. Mm. Who am I to say I've been getting laid from a very young age? Do you know what I mean? My first sexual experience was at 7, so I'm not going to be, you know, and then consensual at 18. So I'm not going to be judging anybody for anything that they do. Mm. My concern about churches, and I am going to throw the penties under the bus here because I just am, is that they have this massive doctrinal belief that you should not be having sex before marriage because it is the greatest sin in the planet. So what the penties are seeing is all these gorgeous young couples that fall in love at church because they've been raised in the church and they grow up through the church. The Bappos are good at it as well. They knock this out as well. They all intermarry as well. They're all the same families.
Oh, yeah.
And these young kids, because they want to do the inverted commas right thing because they've been fed this their whole life from the pulpit, is to be pure and to only ever have one partner and therefore that will please God, and therefore they wait to have sex before they're when they're married. But what they're doing is they're racing off to the altar at 19 and 20.
Yep.
Yeah.
Their brains aren't even fully formed yet.
Jules.
Yeah.
It's a real worry.
It is.
You know?
Oh, yeah, I'm all for sex before marriage.
Yeah.
Definitely.
If you're in love with somebody,
yeah,
I'm with you, babe. Bring that on.
Mm.
You know, if you're in love with somebody and you're in a committed relationship and you love them,
yes,
and it's safe and everybody's protected,
yes,
you know, I think God's all about love.
Yeah.
We're made in the image of God and He is love.
Yes.
So I think that there's a pretty beautiful thing around that. Yeah, bring it on. I can see it coming into the chat now. You know,
yeah.
Horrible minister, I can see it. Yeah, Uniting Church, I mean, I can see it, Jonty. It's coming in, I can see it.
If we want to get into the biblical representation of it, let's do it. Because
go,
I think to understand what a biblical idea of what sex before marriage even is, and I'm going to be brief because I could talk for hours about this, but you have to understand that marriage in the Bible is completely different to what we understand marriage is today. And you have to, I feel really strongly that to have a strong biblical stance on when you can and cannot have sex, you really have to understand what marriage actually is in reference to when you're looking at Scripture. To be able to draw meaning out of anything in Scripture, it's really important to understand who it's written for and when. And to say, oh, well, the Bible says don't have sex before marriage, first of all, show me the verse. Show me the verse. It's not there. But you have to also understand that biblically honored marriages include polygamy. If you rape someone, they're your property and you're married. If a woman's husband dies and that person and that the husband who died has a brother, tough luck to the chick. She's now married to his brother. Like these are all perfectly honored, and like many of the heroes of the Bible, that the people that are honored and rightly so held up as pillars of the faith through the all the stories throughout history and in the Bible, had multiple wives and concubines and side chicks. Like, so to say that the Bible teaches don't have sex before you get married, yep, sure, but like in what contextual understanding of marriage are we talking? It's not two 19-year-old white people walking down an aisle to Mariah Carey. Like, it's not there. So...
What's wrong with that, John? Don't bag it. I was all good with everything until you smashed out the Mariah Carey.
There's nothing wrong with that, but that's not the only. To call that the only form of marriage that is honored by God is just false, because the Bible is a historical text as well as a spiritual text, and it's really important to understand what it is.
I am so grateful.
Well said, Jaunty.
Yeah, that was a high five, bro. That was amazing. Really, that's why you're the senior pastor.
Yeah.
He's gold. He's just gold.
I'm coming for your job, Ness.
Yeah, baby. Absolutely. I just really honour my first consensual sexual experience with a human. And he was just so kind and loving to me. And we were just... I was so in love with him at the time. And I didn't know God at the time. But I've got to tell you, I think about that experience and I think about how beautiful the moment was, and I'm just so grateful for God for actually setting that up for me. You know, a young girl that was sexually abused, and then I get to have my first intercourse with somebody that is so safe, and I was so cared for, and it was just a really loving, beautiful experience. Now, if that's not God, what is? You know, I feel really strongly about that stuff. I mean, I've had sex with other people that wasn't so godly, but that was beautiful, and it was just, you know, so God would say we were married, I would say. You know, oh, sorry, John, to you.
Yes.
You know, beautiful.
Yes. And that's the point, isn't it? How beautiful sex can be.
Yeah. You know? I don't think the sex itself was that great because it was ouchy and I didn't know that it came out.
Let's talk to any 18-year-old and ask them if any sex that they've ever had at age 18 was good.
Yeah, like... no, it was not. But the experience of the closeness and the tenderness
trust.
And the trust and how he loved me and I loved him was that was godly.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, the respect.
It was just beautiful.
Yeah.
I think of it like that. And yeah. I wasn't married, but yeah. I'm super grateful for it.
Yeah.
For that as my first experience, you know, that was just awesome.
Well, that's getting back to the porn thing. I think that's the part of the problem that females, as well as males, are very objectified. That's very much the body.
Yeah.
Mm.
And not instead of like holistically, you know, you're a person, you've got emotions and values and you're worthy and, you know, the integrity of the body and the mind and the soul. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just very much just body.
Yeah.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I add one other thing which is quite funny? Around that first experience with that first gentleman, I was actually at home in my own home because Mum and Dad encouraged me to have as many sexual partners as I wanted to, and I was actually put on the pill at 14. I even remember my father being summoned by my mother to please get his beautiful big pad that he did all his drawings on, because he's an artist, to bring his squeaker pens and his pad to the kitchen table, because Mum wanted him to draw the female anatomy. I was 14, so that I would know where my clitoris was, because it was really important that I understood how to physically satisfy myself with an orgasm. I just remember sitting there, probably in flight or fright, now I think about it, or freeze, probably freeze, Julie, and being so shocked. I can still see Dad doing the drawings. Like, I'm thinking, how does Dad know what that looks like? And Dad did these drawings and arrows pointing to bits and Mum's telling me about my personal anatomy and being quite horrified about that at the time. Interestingly, that I didn't actually go on and have intercourse until I was 18 in a loving relationship, right? Yeah. Yeah. Super interesting.
I think if I can add maybe one final thing, because I know we've gone for quite a long time, and Jules has got to head off soon. I think what a really key thing for me when I was younger in sort of wrapping my head around where sexuality meets faith and God and culture, and which is exactly what we talk about on this podcast, where those things intersect. My minister at the time, who's still my minister, told me about the Jewish marriage tradition of the huppah. Have you heard of this, Jules? I think I've spoken to Ness about this before. It's a canopy, cloth canopy that is present above the couple throughout the entire ceremony, including the wedding night. And it's there as part of the tradition of the ceremony to represent God being present in all aspects of married life, which I think is really beautiful. But to me, and the way he spoke about this, and the way I've really thought about this a lot and internalized and sort of come to my own sort of understanding of what this means for me, is that we as human beings created by God live lives in a number of different spheres. We are physical beings. We are also spiritual beings. We are linked to the divine. We're also sexual beings. Like, that's part of our coding. And that part of us can't be separated. Well, let me rephrase. It can be separated, but it's really, really damaging when it is, particularly if you are a person of faith and you are trying to live in a way that is, you know, in line with your faith and however that expresses physically and in your behavior. If you take sexuality and go, oh, well, that's a different thing. I'm going to put that over there and God doesn't really need to know about any of that. We talk about shame.
Yeah.
That's where all of that really starts to set in. And so this idea of this metaphor that I really love of the hoopah being...
the covering of God.
It's there, including on your wedding night. And I think, you know, past the surface, like, ooh, gross, are you in a threesome with Jesus? Like, that's the classic response to that kind of idea. I think outside of the relationship itself being under God, as an individual, it's so important for all of those different elements of your being to be united under God and part of that relationship, because when they're not, that's when it becomes really, really messy.
Oversharing now.
Yeah. Sure. Go for it.
I think the most beautiful sex I've ever had in my entire life was when my husband became a Christian. So I'd been a Christian for 7 years before Rob was, and then Rob became a Christian. And then the idea of, you just talked about the holy threesome, there's, and I often say this to my couples when I'm doing the pre-marriage counselling stuff, there's nothing better than bringing Jesus into the bedroom. Because there's something absolutely holy and magnificent. Like, he's all around us all the time, people. What is he, just going to the cupboard when you're getting laid? I don't think so. He's right there in the sheets,
mate. I'll just give you a bit of privacy.
He's in the sheets, he's there. And it's beautiful to bring God into that, because it is wholesome and horny and holy. There we go.
Horny and holy.
Do you love that?
Horny and holy.
You've never probably heard that.
That'd be a good song. Neil Diamond.
Yeah. And wholesome. And wholesome. Yeah. You know, and that's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. There's nothing like it.
Thanks, Ness, for sharing. Yeah. I've got to go.
Thanks, Jules.
Thanks so much for joining.
Thank you, guys. See you next time.
Thanks for coming.
Okay, bye.
See ya.
And we're back. That was really great, wasn't it? I feel like I'm biased, but I thought that was a really great conversation.
I'm exhausted. It's like, whoa. Whew, heavy content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear from you as well if you have any thoughts or anything, any thoughts or revelations or questions you might have after that. We'd love to hear from you. We're going to talk about any and all questions that we get sent. We've already got a bunch of stuff in the mail, not physical mail. We don't get letters.
Or if we got anything wrong.
Yeah,
I love being corrected.
Absolutely.
Love that.
We're going to devote, I think, a whole episode later on to responding to messages and questions and stories. We'd love to hear. And also, feel free, if you are being scared off doing that by the idea that we're going to share identities of people that...
Not happening.
Absolutely. Anonymity?
That's the one.
If that's important to you, just let us know. I mean, by practice, we're probably not going to share names anyway. But if you think it'll help you, and if it'll help our listeners to share a story, feel free. We'd love to hear from you.
Love that.
Before we head out, gratitude. What are you grateful for?
Well, I think particularly having just had that conversation with Julie and sharing about my childhood and my first sexual experiences before I was a Christian, and experiences even after being a Christian, I think my childhood had grit and grime attached to it, as I freely share. I just wanted to say how grateful I feel for the fact that even though my childhood was gritty and there were some grimy components to it, and at times when I share the stories that people's reactions are, well, that wasn't normal, I'm actually really grateful that God gave me those experiences, because I feel like I can share the authenticity of those experiences in a way that will potentially help others, because I can't be the only one in the world experiencing the things that I'm experiencing, but I'm freely willing to talk about it and share about it in a radically honest way. And I just thank the Lord that he has shaped me that way, that I can feel free enough to be that person. And so I am really grateful. I've almost come to a place in my life where I can thank the Lord even for the really dodgy shit that went down, because I wouldn't be who I am today without those experiences. And I've got a high level of empathy and care and love for humanity that I think has come about because of that. And I'm grateful for that.
Amen. Talk about filthy hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Preach it.
That's it.
That's amazing.
That's all I've got today.
Love it. That about does it. Once again, feel free to get in touch if anything
you resonated with or even disagreed with, we want to hear from you.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see you next week. We're going to be continuing for, at this point, we don't actually know how long this series is going to go on for. As long as we feel like it's helpful and worth talking about, we're going to keep talking about these topics around sexuality and intimacy. So feel free to get in touch as well if there's any like topics that you want us to talk about.
Mm.
But yeah, we'll see you next week on the podcast.
Thanks for listening.
And I'm Jonty. See you next week.
See you then.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed that episode. We'll be back next week to talk about purity culture with an exclusive interview that you are not going to want to miss. Our guest next week has requested that they remain anonymous, so we can't tell you who it is, but they are going to be sharing their story for the first time with us. It's pretty explosive, and we can't wait to share that interview with you. Until then, though, if you want to support Jules's work in the community, providing free counselling services to those in need, visit unitingheartandsoul.org. to find out where to do that. Our socials are all in the show notes, and if you want to get in contact with us more directly, you can do that by emailing us at filthyhopepod@gmail.com or by joining our private Facebook discussion group. See you next week.